Hi, and welcome to this edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health. Our mission here at Fresh Hope for Mental Health is to empower you to live well in spite of your mental health challenge by sharing insights through interviews, practical tools for living well, encouragement and courage for overcoming all from a Christian perspective. And now, here's your host, Pastor Brad Hayes.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to this edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health. I'm Brad Hayes, your host. Our purpose here on Fresh Hope for Mental Health is to empower you to live a faith-filled, rich, and full life in spite of having a mental health diagnosis. Well, today we have a guest that some of you know. He's been a guest before, and I'm so glad he's taken time to talk with us again, and that's Dr. Matthew Stanford, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Hope and Healing and Institute in Houston. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And he's also an adjunct professor of psychiatry at Baylor College of Medicine and Houston Methodist Hospital Institute for Academic Medicine. And I'm just so glad you've taken time to talk with us today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk with you today because you've got kind of two major things that I'd like to talk with you about. And we'll start with your book, okay? In December, you had a new book come out, right?
And, I did, Grace for the Children, Finding Hope in the Midst of Child and Adolescent Mental Illness.
Yeah, tell me about the book.
Yeah, you know, when I wrote Grace for the Afflicted, the first edition way back in 2008, and as soon as that came out, people started asking me, what about children's disorders? You know, I mentioned it a little bit in that book, and then there was an update, a revised and expanded version of that that came out in 2017. So I talked to the book publisher about doing a children's edition, you know, where we focused on children's issues and problems, and that's where Grace for the Children came from. And I think it's being, well received. I think there's I think people are actually, to tell you the truth, a little bit more willing and open to discuss mental health issues in children than they are in adults.
I think so. I would agree. Yeah. So, what does the book look at? You know, with children, as with adults, but many times we think kids have behavior issues. They're misbehaving. They're just, you know, not well behaved. And so much of that's connected, right, to the mental health issue.
No, absolutely. I mean, when you, children do not manifest mental health problems in the same way that adults do. In fact, some mental health problems that adults have just simply don't even occur in children because of the developmental period. But when a child does start to display some problem thinking or behavior, they usually are identified within some kind of a structured environment like school. And then a lot of times looked at as a behavioral issue, as you mentioned, and mental health is not really even thought. It's just thought, well, if we can structure enough with this child, we can discipline them enough, we'll move them down the right path, when in reality, this child may be struggling with anxiety or depressive issue or something like that. So we talk about mental health problems like depression in children. Depression can occur at any age and manifest very similarly in children as it does in adults, whereas something like bipolar disorder, for instance, looks very different in a child. It really even is the same disorder. It looks very different in a child. And autism, which is a neurodevelopmental issue, ADHD, look at a whole variety of issues. What does it look like in a child? What are the ages of onset? How is it treated in a child? What is the long-term prognosis? And, I think really the title kind of tells it all, and that is that there is great hope for children that are identified early and get proper care. And then the parents and the faith community have a huge role to play in helping those children, kind of move forward and recover from these problems they might be struggling with.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think we probably get that better, that the parents and the faith community play a huge role and the educational community play a huge role in their getting better or learning and growing past it or whatever you want to say for them. Than we do with adults. We don't tend to get it quite as much that an adult needs a community and that kind of thing, right?
No, absolutely. I think with a child, I mean, a child is already a sympathetic figure, you know, and so if a child is struggling, if we can get past the initial idea that, well, he's just a bad kid, which is hard enough, believe me, I see a lot of that. So let's say we get past that and we say, you know, Jimmy really is struggling. I think people then tend to rally. You know, the teachers come, you know, teachers obviously love children and care for children. And,
sure.
You know, everybody kind of rallies around the child. I think when you have an adult, you know, that it's kind of, you know, your thought that, well, you just kind of need to get your poop together, you know,
right.
Put yourself in your bootstraps and come on, you know what to do. You know, I was sad once and it didn't,
yep.
You know, I mean, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So you don't really do that with a child because you recognize that they just haven't had the experiences or have maybe the verbal or cognitive skills to
right.
handle these things. And you also see them as somebody that's in a teachable or developmental period. Whereas, you know, once we hit adulthood, we just kind of think everybody is fine and you just kind of do it yourself. And I think that's another reason that, you know, people don't seek out assistance. They don't seek out counseling and things like that. They're like, well, you know, the world tells me how to be able to handle this myself. So
right.
I'll try.
Right. Adults, their issues show up with behavior also, but somehow we perceive that behavior in an adult is much more controllable by the adult.
And absolutely.
Sometimes that's just not the case, is it?
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, an adult can struggle with issues, mental health issues that really cause their thoughts and behaviors to be far from their control.
Right.
And it's not just an issue of being able to think yourself out of it. I mean, I've never met anyone who has a mental health problem who wanted to have a mental health problem.
Exactly.
So if it was an issue of like, you just need to kind of decide you don't want to be that way anymore or think really hard and it'll go away. I mean, we wouldn't have any mental health problems. And I think with children, they're seen as, again, sympathetic in that this is something that's come upon this child. It's not something that, and it's something we need to help the child through. Whereas, like you've described with the adult, it's more like, you know, you're doing something wrong or you just need to take this yourself.
Yeah. Now, let's say that I'm a parent who has a child with mental health issues and I'm exhausted. It's every day it's something new, or every day we're struggling to get Johnny through school and et cetera, et cetera. What would you say to me? What would you say to me in the knowledge that you have? And even what would this book be saying to me?
I mean, what I would say to you is that there is hope, because you're going to very quickly give up hope because you're going to run into a lot of negativity out there and a lot of struggles. Secondly, I'd tell you that the mental health system, while we have incredible resources and great treatments that are highly effective, is very difficult to navigate. And you really, really have to be an advocate for your child. You're the person that's going to be able to get them the care that they need. Don't expect others to just offer that. And then I would tell you that, you know, finding the right treatment is very important, because once the right set of treatment and circumstances are fine, these illnesses are treatable or manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Fourthly, I would say this: you don't need to do this on your own. I mean, there are, you know, we even here at the Hope and Healing Center, we offer support groups for caregivers of individuals. In fact, a lot of the individuals in there are the parents of children, both young children and adult children with mental health problems. There are opportunities for you to get support and care for yourself. Because if you fall apart, who's going to advocate for your child?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you really need to take care of yourself. This is an overwhelming situation. This is not something that people know what to do or equipped to do or to deal with. You need to really seek out some assistance for yourself and make sure you're taking care of yourself. You know, self-care is very important, and that'll only make it better for your child.
Absolutely. You mentioned in that list of things that it's extremely hard to navigate the system, to find the right kind of doctor, the right kind of care, correct? If I understood you correctly?
Absolutely. I mean, we have a real lack of mental health care providers just generally. child and adolescent psychiatrists, for instance, are very hard to find in most parts of the country. And then on top of that, this type of treatment is very expensive. A lot of insurance doesn't even cover it. And so people have to pay out of pocket. And then there's a lot of stigma where people just simply don't want to go and get care because they don't want to kind of out themselves. And with parents, you find a lot of denial because there's a lot of parent guilt. You know, if I had just raised my child better, if I loved my child more, if my wife and I didn't argue so much, whatever it is that you decide is the cause, then this wouldn't be happening. And if, you know, and so I'm not going to go, you know, we're going to fix it internally. So, you know, but it's a very difficult system to navigate. I mean, if you have cancer, you know what to do.
Right.
I mean, you know where to go.
Right.
And then there's a process. If you have some kind of vague mood issue or, you know, you odd thoughts, I mean, you know, mental health problems are the only medical condition in which the disordered organ has to make the decisions for care.
Yes. And I've heard you say that before.
Depending on what problem you have, you may not even realize that you have a problem.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a very difficult, a very, very difficult thing. Plus we've stigmatized the concept of mental illness. So if somebody comes to you and said, you know, Brad, you know, I think you need to go see a mental health care provider, and that's not the same as somebody coming to you and saying, hey, I really think you need to go get that spot on your arm looked at by a dermatologist. That could be skin cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one is sympathetic and like the person's showing you care. The other one is perceived as you're insulting me because you think I'm crazy.
Yep. Well, and I've had that said to me, and you know, way back when, prior to diagnosis, and I mean, that just infuriated me. It was kind of like, you think I'm crazy? You're the one who's crazy, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you become defensive. Talk to me about, if I'm that parent, and I know it's hard to navigate, are there places where I could have somebody help me navigate it? Where would I look for help in learning how to navigate it?
Absolutely. I mean, there are some advocacy groups that I think are real helpful. I think a national one that's very helpful is NAMI. I think, you know, NAMIs exist in virtually every state. It's a national alliance for the mentally ill.
Right.
You know, you can contact them, and or it's NAMI.org is their website.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they can help you, you know, figure out what's going on in your community. You know, there's also, you know, a lot of different, you know, even going to the SAMHSA website, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Association, which is the federal government. They have a database there to help you find, you know, places, institutions, facilities, providers. You can go to the American Association of Christian Counselors website. They have a search for providers as well. American Psychological Association has that. You know, so there's a lot of, I think, online opportunities. Mental Health America is another one.
Yes.
So, but again, if, you know, I know these and you know these because we're kind of in the field, it's just not something people just kind of know.
Right.
Right. You know, it's, you know, also, I think you have to humble yourself and you have to say, you know what, my child is suffering. And I need to get them some care. And I don't care what other people think about me. And I don't care what other people think about my child. I need the best care I can find. So you need to ask your friends and family if they know a psychiatrist or a psychologist or who they would refer to.
Yeah.
Because to tell you the truth, you know, you'll be surprised how many people go to them that don't tell you they go to them and know them. And then also start with, you know, you might start with your child's pediatrician and just ask them for a referral. It's always best to get a referral from somebody, you know, that has some interaction with that individual so that you know you're getting a quality individual. Because to tell you the truth, just like in any profession, just like in mechanics, there are good mechanics and bad mechanics, and there are good mental health care providers and there are bad mental health care providers.
Right.
And you want to make sure you get the best you can for your child.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Well, this sounds like a great resource for parents. And if you're listening and you have a child who has struggles or you think they might, I would strongly recommend that you pick up a copy of the book. You can get it on Amazon. You just look up, you can enter Matt's name or Grace for the Children, Finding Hope in the Midst of Child and Adolescent Mental Illness. And I suspect it's like most of his other two books that are very easy reads, but they make a lot of sense and go deep. So I would encourage you to pick that up if you're a mom or a dad who's struggling, or contact the various websites that he mentioned. Let's move on to this other new adventure you're in with Dr. Tim Clinton, correct? If I have that correct. So it's a certification for mental health coaching. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And it's a first responder training. Talk to me about what this is.
Yeah, we here at the Hope and Healing Center, we have a program called Gateway to Hope. And I'll just be a website for that if they want to learn more
sure,
about that.
Sure, please.
Go to mentalhealthgateway.org, mentalhealthgateway.org. Gateway to Hope, one of the things in the U.S. is that the majority of people with mental health problems never receive any treatment. And so it's a pretty disturbing statistic.
Right.
For all the reasons that we've been talking about. But what we do know is that when people are struggling with mental health problems, they are more likely to go to a clergy before they go to a mental health care provider or physician. That's something that's been found by the National Institutes of Health, and it's been consistent over the years. We know they're more likely to go to a clergy first. They're seeking out some assistance. But what we also know is that clergy tell us that they don't understand or feel untrained to recognize mental health problems, and very few clergy actually ever make a referral to a mental health care provider. So thought has been, what if we go into faith communities, train clergy and staff how to recognize, how to respond to mental health care problems, set up or literally embed mental health services in the faith community where we have support groups and mental health coaches right there at the faith community that can provide some therapeutic care as well as connect them to professional services in the community. And so what the mental health coach is a person who's received 40-hour training in serious mental illness. They learn how to do intakes. They learn how to do assessments. They learn how to practice some evidence-based kind of therapeutic support like cognitive behavior therapy. They learn about addiction and all types of different mental health problems, crisis intervention. And then what they are is a very highly trained layman that knows about the mental health care system, understands how to provide some supportive care to a person who's struggling with these problems, and can serve as an advocate for a person who is trying to recover. And so that's what we're doing with the American Association of Christian Counselors. We had a program here that we did in person, and now we've moved that online using really top quality individuals from around the country. Psychologists and psychiatrists do the training. It's like I said, it's 40 hours, and it's done in three modules through the
Light University.
Light University, yeah, and they offer a certification after the 40 hours, and then you can be recertified yearly by getting certain number of continuing ed credits. And what we've modeled this training after is the certified peer specialist training that exists in most states.
Right.
Certified peer specialist training was developed to try to fill the gap for the lack of mental health care providers. So it was individuals who had lived experience with mental health problems, understanding that they already had kind of, they had a school of hard knocks approach to training for their mental health problem because they had one or their family member had one. And then you give them some training and they could serve as a supportive advocate for someone who is trying to recover. Well, my thought is that we can go even further than that. If we intensify the training a little bit, we can train people that don't have lived experience necessarily to provide some of these, kind of therapeutic services as well. Right there at the faith community, which is where we know people go first. And they also do this all from a faith-based perspective, which I think makes it a very unique kind of program. So we've begun that actually the first module of the three modules went active May 4th, and I anticipate the other two modules will go active very quickly here. Right now, the AACC is offering the training for free.
Yes.
Sans a little, I think there's a little IT fee to access everything, but the overall training is tuition free. And so it's an incredible, you know, training. We have over 100 faith communities that we've trained here in the Houston area that are involved in our Gateway to Hope network that have support groups and mental health coaches. And I can tell you that the mental health coaches just absolutely transform the mental health ministry of a church.
I can imagine.
It takes the burden off the back of the clergy. All the clergy and the staff have to do is recognize that a person is struggling with a mental health problem, and then they just simply refer them on to the mental health coaches right there in the faith community. And those individuals help them connect with other ministries, help them connect with professional service, provide one-on-one care for them, get them in support groups. And then pastors can be pastors. They can provide pastoral care.
Right.
They don't have to try to figure out, how do I get this person to a psychiatrist? What do I do?
Well, and like we said before, the stigma is so great that sometimes I, as a pastor, have encouraged people to go see someone, and they don't, because they don't want to go to a psychiatrist yet. They don't think it's gotten bad enough. But if I said so-and-so on the staff or within our church, why don't you sit down and talk with them? That makes sense. It would be a lot less threatening, I would think.
Yeah, I think, you know, it allows you, and as you said, if the person says, you know, if you as the pastor, you recognize that this congregant you're working with may have a mental health problem, and you say, well, I'd like to refer you, and they say, well, I don't want to do that. You can say, we have some services right here at the church. They're not going to cost you anything. It's run by congregants that we have right here. So why don't you just come here and receive some services? And it's a great kind of entry point where people feel a lot more comfortable and safe because they've already come to the church looking for assistance.
Right.
They certainly would be willing to come back.
Right, right. Now, would it be fair to say this doesn't really replace certified peer specialists? In fact, I could almost see where you could have a mental health coach within a setting, and then there may be peer support specialists that help the people that they refer them to, so to speak. The mental health coach might say, I think you'd benefit from, and send them to a peer support specialist. Or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. I think peer support specialists and these mental health coaches work side by side. I think they're both important parts of building a new mental health care system where we have, you know, there's no good term for it, but kind of a lower level provider.
Right.
You know, somebody who can offer services for low or no cost that provide you with that care potentially before you end up at a mental health care provider or while you're going to a mental health care provider, that makes it less likely that you're going to go into the higher levels of care where you have to be hospitalized.
Yep.
And things like that.
Well,
we certainly have that in most medical disciplines, but we just don't have it in mental health.
Exactly. And I have said numerous times to our friend out in Washington, D.C., Ben, I've said it's as though there are no EMTs. There are no PAs. There's nothing. And those of us who are pastors and on the front line, it's like we don't have any training, and yet I'd know what to do if somebody was having a heart attack, you know.
Exactly. You have a set up system of who to call and what to do.
Yes.
And that's what we need to do. And that's what I'm thinking, you know, what we've been thinking this mental health coach, the beginning of this may be, is that the opportunity to begin to show that you can train, in a sense, laymen to provide some level of care that would be beneficial.
Yes.
We know that the data shows us that certified peer specialists, that what they do is efficacious.
Yes.
We know that the research shows us that peer support groups reduce symptoms and improve mm-hmm. quality of life. I mean, we know this. We know that warm lines help people. We know,
yes.
I mean, we know these things work. What we haven't done is try to develop them on a systematic scale where we're, in a sense, trying to build a new system. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to stop thinking that we have a functioning mental health care system. Because like I said earlier, the majority of people with mental health problems never receive any treatment. So how could you say that the system that was set up to treat them works?
Exactly.
If it doesn't engage a majority of people.
Exactly.
So we need to rebuild the system. Unfortunately, our approaches have been top down. We've said things like, well, we don't have enough mental health care providers, so let's get more people to go to graduate school and medical school and try to, so let's come up with scholarship programs and things like that. Well, those have not worked. It
hasn't added any, really.
No, not at all. I mean, we lose psychiatric beds every year. I mean, there's less than 100,000 psychiatric beds in the entire country right now.
Mm.
So we need to start thinking bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
We need to start with where people go first, which is to churches.
Mm-hmm.
If they go there first, then we need to be able to have them recognized there as having a problem, and we need to be able to begin to provide them service there.
Yes.
And I think support groups and mental health coaches and certified peer specialists, they need to be embedded in our faith communities, and they are a first step into the mental health care system.
I agree. Now, let's just say I'm a layperson, and boy, I get this, and I think, okay, I'd like to train as a mental health coach, or maybe I'm a certified peer specialist. What do you have for pastors that helps them understand that they can have this kind of thing embedded in their faith community? Is there training that you guys offer that would help pastors see the need?
Yes. We have what we call our Empower training is specifically developed for pastors and ministry staff. And so it's a 2-hour training, and it's available online now.
Okay.
We're going to be enhancing that as the year goes on. But if you'll go to mentalhealthgateway.org, it's just the Empower training, and it is specifically set up. It trains clergy and ministry staff to learn what we call the 4 R's, how to recognize a mental health care problem, how to make a referral, how to relate to an individual or a family who's struggling with a mental health care problem, and then how to set up restorative programs like mental health coaching in your faith community to help individuals that are struggling with these serious mental health problems.
Good. Great. Well, those are very important things. And for those of you who are listening, maybe you are a trained or certified peer support specialist, or you're interested in this mental health coaching. In fact, Matt, one of my regional direct ambassadors for Fresh Hope from El Salvador is taking the mental health coach training.
Great. And I actually think it's a fantastic training for missionaries that are in parts of the world where really they don't even have a mental health care system. I mean, they could easily then become just about the best trained individual in an area in relationship to mental health issues.
Yeah,
and so,
great.
That was something I had in the back of my mind as we were putting that training together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my friends that are listening to you guys, I would encourage you to, for instance, maybe your pastor isn't aware of it. Maybe you see the need and he or she does not. I would encourage you to go to this Mental Health Gateway, correct?
Yes.
Mentalhealthgateway.org. And take a look at it yourself and then try to sit down with your pastor and talk about it. Maybe through a process of bringing him or her along on this, you can begin to really create within your church a real serious, if you will, mental health, effective mental health ministry. I'd like to encourage you to do that. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Stanford. We really appreciate it. This has been valuable information, and I thank you for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me. I love what you guys are doing there.
We keep plugging away. So thank you so much again. I want to thank you that are listening. We thank you very much for your support and your care and your prayers. We hope this has been helpful to you. I believe it has been helpful to you. And we'd really like to hear from you. You can always email me at pastorbrad@freshhope.us, or you can leave a voicemail on the podcast website. If you'd like to connect with us through social media, we have all those ways that you can connect with us. Be sure and check out, if you are a Spanish speaker and you'd like to have mental health resources in Spanish, we do have now the Fresh Hope for Mental Health book in Spanish, and you can pick that up on Amazon. So be sure and tell your friends about this program. And once again, I thank Dr. Sanford, and we just really appreciate all your support and your care. And listen, my friend, between now and the next time, may God hold you in His perfect, fresh, and new hope daily.
You've been listening to Fresh Hope for Mental Health. If you have an opportunity, please review, share, and subscribe to the Fresh Hope for Mental Health podcast on iTunes or on the service that you use. We encourage you to share our podcast on social media with your friends and family. Previous podcasts of Fresh Hope for Mental Health can be found at freshhopeformentalhealth.com, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes. Fresh Hope is one of the leading networks of faith-based peer support groups internationally. For more information about Fresh Hope, go to freshhope.us.